From the Voice of America in Washington, this is VOA Global. Hello, I'm Ira Melman.
Hello, Ira. I'm Jim Stevenson.
Hi, Jim.
On our program today, North Korea again threatens to resume nuclear tests.
Ray Kugel tells us all about a movie that deals with the way some local news is covered by TV stations in the U.S. It's called Nightcrawler.
The United States sends its vice president to Kiev. Steve Norman will be here with International Edition.
In the American Cafe, a push for some happiness in the United States.
We all want to be happy. And David Byrd tells us about a new kind of cruise ship.
All of that and more on today's edition of VOA Global from the Voice of America.
Glad you could join me for a few minutes for Daybreak Asia, our summary of Asian news and events for Friday, November 21st. I'm Jim Stevenson. In brief today, North Korea has threatened to carry out a fresh nuclear test in response to a United Nations Committee's condemnation of Pyongyang's alleged human rights abuses. Joining us from Beijing for more is Shannon Van Sant.
The North Korea threat came after the United Nations moved to bring the country before the International Criminal Court, or the ICC, for crimes against humanity earlier this week. On Thursday, China's foreign ministry spokesperson urged all parties to return to dialogue and the six-party talks. Hong Lei said differences on human rights issues should be resolved by all countries via dialogue. He said China's position is to maintain stability on the peninsula and resolve issues through dialogue. The UN Human Rights Committee passed a resolution on Tuesday calling for a probe of the country's human rights violations. China voted against the resolution and will likely veto moves to refer North Korea to the ICC. China has been a longtime ally of North Korea and returns North Korean refugees who are caught fleeing across their shared border. Many of these refugees say they are fleeing what the UN described in a report earlier this year as unspeakable atrocities. The UN has detailed the use of labor camps, torture, rape, and abductions by the North Korean government. North Korea has called these allegations a political provocation and said the UN resolution was based on fabricated testimonies from North Korean defectors. Today, North Korea released a statement on government-run television. The North Korean newsreader said that the U.S. hostile policy toward the Democratic People's Republic of Korea compels North Korea to not refrain any longer from conducting a new nuclear test. The reader said the principal architect of the UN resolution and their colleagues will be held wholly responsible for all the consequences of the resolution's adoption. Several American research institutes cite evidence that North Korea is preparing for a nuclear test. Johns Hopkins University's U.S. Korea Institute at SAIS reports of a recent reactor shutdown in North Korea. The Institute for Science and International Security has also said satellite imagery shows a reactor shutdown. And the U.S. Korea Institute reported other evidence, including truck activity near the reactor site. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Beijing.
A South Korean court has given a 10-year jail sentence to the head of the company that operated the ferry that capsized in April, killing over 300 people. Kim Hansuk was found guilty Thursday of negligence for allowing the Sewol ferry to be overloaded with improperly stored cargo. The 6,800-ton ferry, which officials say was too top-heavy, capsized while making a routine turn, killing 304 people, most of them students on a school outing. The 71-year-old Kim denied the charges and said the responsibility for the disaster lies with his boss, whose decomposed body was found in June. Last week, the court sentenced the Sewol's captain and 15 other crew from 5 to 36 years in prison for abandoning the vessel. Thailand's former Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawat is back in the news. She remains under legal scrutiny for failing to stop massive losses and corruption in the country's controversial rice support scheme. We hear from Ron Corbett in Bangkok that the Thai finance ministry estimates that the country has spent more than $21 billion to support rice programs by various governments over the past decade.
The government-backed rice price support scheme launched by former leader Yingluck Shinawat and her Pua Thai party proved an election winner at the 2011 national polls. The plan promised farmers a fixed above-market price for their rice crop. Authorities hoped it would give them greater control over Thailand's rice exports and lead them to consolidate the country's position as the world's biggest rice exporter. But regional rice-producing countries such as India, Vietnam and Myanmar increased their harvests and sold more exports on the open market, better meeting demand than they had in the past years. That meant that Thai rice went unsold and payments to farmers were delayed. The government began stockpiling the unsold rice, which authorities now estimate at 19 million metric tons. Virat Ranong, an economist with the independent think tank Thailand Development Research Institute, TDRI, says the losses estimated by the finance ministry could rise as the military government sets about attempting to clear the enormous rice stockpile.
And in fact, the bad thing is that not only the Phuea Thai government was incompetent to sell its rice, my expectation is that most of the rice will sit here for a long time as well before the military government would be able to do something with it.
The Thai Ministry of Finance estimates the losses from the rice scheme under former Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawatra's government total more than $16 billion. All told, the ministry said similar programs dating back to 2004 led to total losses in excess of $21 billion. Critics of the rice price program say it also lost enormous funds through corruption. Members of Ms. Yingluck's party insist the program's main beneficiaries were Thailand's rice farmers. But the opposition Democrat Party published detailed reports on the rice scheme based on information supplied by bureaucrats and officials in government ministries and state-owned banks. Ron Corbin for VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
You may have heard India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi was in Australia and stressed the importance of security and economic ties in an historic address to the Australian Parliament. From Sydney, Phil Mercer joins us to fill us in on the details.
Narendra Modi is the first Indian leader to visit Australia in 28 years. He used an address to Parliament in Canberra to highlight the importance of bilateral ties for advancing regional peace and stability and combating terrorism. He's warned that the affluence he seeks for his nation of 1.25 billion people could be jeopardised by extremism, and he's urged Canberra to work alongside India on security issues. Trade too has been a pivotal part of Prime Minister Modi's speech, and he said Australia was vital in India's bid for greater prosperity.
I see Australia as a major partner in every area of our national priority. Providing skills and education to our youth, a roof over every head and electricity in every household.
Mr. Modi's government has its sights set on imports of Australia's uranium for nuclear power after Canberra lifted a long-standing ban on sales to energy-hungry India. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney, Australia.
I'm Jim Stevenson. Daybreak Asia comes to you every weekday on VOA Global. It's also a podcast. Subscribe to it for free at voanews.com.
This program you're listening to and the Voice of America is called VOA Global. It is an interactive program, at least we're trying to make it that way. And one way to entice you is to give you something for free.
That's right, Ira. You know, this time of year, you can count on at least two things. One, there's a new year coming up. 2015 is right around the corner.
Taxes too?
Well, not yet.
No, okay. Right.
Maybe where you live, but not here. And the second thing you can count on is we're going to have a calendar for that new year. And in fact, we do. The new VOA 2015 calendar is out. It features scenes of the southwestern United States, quite scenic. And it's free. It's available to you. All you have to do is ask. Write to us at VOA Asia at voanews.com. That address again, VOA Asia at voanews.com. And please be sure to include your full postal address and tell us how you heard this program. We come to you in a variety of ways. Facebook, Twitter. Well, I guess you can't really hear the program on Twitter, but...
Yeah, it's two, three or four words. That's about it. Weibo, a whole bunch of things.
Tell us how you heard us.
You know what we do around here. We compile things. All right. This is your audience feedback time. And we had the story of North Korea. Jim just read it. North Korea threatening a nuclear test over UN vote. We hear first from Ed in New Jersey. And he said, I would sure like to know where I can find the report on that. Well, it's all over the place. Israel, Omotayo from Nigeria, says the government of North Korea has been keeping its own people in bondage and treating them like slaves for decades. Now, let this vicious government borrow a leave from the prosperous South Korea.
That's our feedback. Be sure to write to us for any story that you see on our website at voanews.com. This is VOA Global on the Voice of America. Hi, Ira.
Hello, Jim. We have an interesting movie review coming up. It's a movie I've seen. It's called Nightcrawler. Ray Kugel will be here with one of his very unique and very entertaining movie reviews. And it deals with how some local news is covered by TV stations in the United States and something we're really not proud of.
And also China Focus coming your way, a Chinese journalist about to go on trial.
I'm Ray Kugel with the Hollywood Beat. What's new at the movies? The local television news business in America is notorious for showing violence, whether it's murders, accidents, or general mayhem. A new movie called Nightcrawler shows how that kind of bloodlust journalism is done and why. It takes an intense performance by Jake Gyllenhaal to pull it off in the dark, noirish setting of Los Angeles. Gyllenhaal plays Lou Bloom, a scrap metal thief who witnesses a freelance film crew shooting footage of a gruesome nighttime car crash. The video will be sold to a local TV news station. Bloom is captivated and decides this could be just the right job for him.
Excuse me, sir. I'm looking for a job. I'm a hard worker. I set high goals. My motto is, if you want to win the lottery, you have to make the money to buy a ticket. So what do you say? I could start tomorrow, or even why not tonight?
After getting a police scanner and cheap video camera, Bloom begins to roam the streets just waiting to beat the competition and the police to the scene. He's a natural and sells his first bloody video to a low-rated station where the late-night news director, played by Rene Russo, sees this as good business.
Excuse me. I have something you'll be very excited about.
You have a good eye. I want you to contact me when you have something.
Something like this.
Think of our newscast as a screaming woman running down the street with her throat cut.
You will be seeing me again.
But things get complicated when Bloom's talent for filming the underbelly of the city's carnage develops into more than just a way to make a buck. It's beating the competition to the scene of a home invasion in an affluent neighborhood that causes Bloom to quit observing and do some harmful rearranging. Gyllenhaal dropped 30 pounds to give him a haggard and creepy look that works well for this most unsympathetic role, where he travels vacant streets and meets plenty of sleazy characters under the cover of darkness. Gyllenhaal says it wasn't easy to work in a nighttime world.
I felt every obstacle helped me get into the character. Working at night sort of changes the chemicals in your brain and in your body. And, you know, Lou, the character I play, lives at night, thrives at night. And it was essential that I feel that.
Nightcrawler marks the directing debut of Dan Gilroy, who also wrote the screenplay. The movie is an effective mix of drama, action, and a lesson about how much TV news today is tabloid in the truest sense. If it bleeds, it leads. Gyllenhaal says the movie has given him a new perspective on journalism.
I think I'll look at news from now on, and I did while I was making it, in a way that I will always ask myself where the edited parts are. I will always ask myself what else the person said. I will always ask myself if it was... I will always check another source.
Gyllenhaal and the movie are receiving good notices. The New York Times calls Nightcrawler an effectively executed urban thriller, suspenseful and entertaining. USA Today says Gyllenhaal turns in one of the year's most memorable characters, and Rolling Stone calls this a deliciously twisted piece of work and Gyllenhaal scarily brilliant. For those in need of a good fix for the nocturnal seedy side of a big city and some of its most desperate characters, Nightcrawler is a must-see. Nightcrawler is now playing in Asia. The Hollywood Beat goes on at voanews.com. I'm Ray Kugel.
You gotta call the cops.
And we will, at the right time.
But I don't know what to do.
We're gonna find the person that drove that car.
Start filming.
I'm Detective Fonieri.
I think you withheld information.
That would be a very unprofessional thing for me to do.
It would be murder.
What you promised me. I want something people can't turn away from.
911, what's your emergency?
I'm Sarah Williams with China Focus. Prominent Chinese journalist Gao Yu is scheduled to go on trial Friday at a court in Beijing, charged with leaking state secrets overseas. Following her arrest in April, Gao appeared on Chinese state television, apparently confessing to obtaining a Communist Party document and sharing it with a foreign news organization. The item in question is document number 9, which warns party members against universal values, civil society, and a free press. A U.S.-based Chinese language website, Mingjing, published an article about it. The Guardian newspaper reports that the publisher of Mingjing said the document was not obtained through Gao, but was widely available from other sources. If Gao is found guilty, she will be sent to prison for the third time. Bob Dietz is the Asia coordinator for the New York-based Committee to Protect Journalists. He tells me about the legal case facing Gao and the media climate under Chinese President Xi Jinping.
The charges are foolish or ridiculous. I think what you're seeing is an accelerated crackdown on journalists, especially those who want to reveal the internal workings of the government. Under the Xi Jinping government, we've just seen this accelerate, this repression that just keeps the thing from moving ahead at all. Journalism before Xi and after Xi are two different beasts in China at this point. At one point, there was space and room for journalists to work as journalists, but it's been completely repressed and suppressed at this point by Xi.
The document that Gao has been accused of leaking, this document number 9, what was contained in that you know, so upset authorities?
It was the government's plan or directive on how to combat what it sees as Western interference in its media sector and in its broader civil society as well. There were several points. One is a rejection of this concept of universal human rights or universal values, the promotion of democracy, the free dissemination of information. They were all seen as tendencies that had to be combated, especially in the media. And it was written for upper echelon government members and policymakers, really, to adapt. The fact that it was made public, especially when it was sent out of the country to a magazine published in the United States, I think that really set off the anger and really raised the ire of the government. And I think Gao is facing a very difficult situation here.
Now, Gao was recorded. She made a confession.
Yes.
And she said that this was made under duress.
Yes.
What is known about the duress?
I don't know if there was any physical duress, although I'm sure she wasn't being held in comfortable conditions. But they were threatening, she has a son, and they were threatening to somehow rope him into this situation as well and to make him suffer for what Gao had done. I empathize with that, of being a father and having children. And I think you just have to understand that that's the way the government works at times, especially when it wants to put on something that's really beginning to approach the level of a show trial in terms of this is what we're going to do to people who go against our will under this new government.
Is it known how much access Gao has had to a legal counsel during the past few months?
I think it's been totally restricted or highly limited, and that's not unique to Gao. Most of the cases we see of journalists or human rights activists, their attorneys have very, very, very limited access to them, sometimes only the day before the trial, sometimes only walking into the courtroom and seeing the person for the first time ever when the trial is about to start. That's a pattern that we've seen for a long time. You know, allowing people to have an attorney kind of puts a gloss on the situation of saying, oh, you know, this is representation and this is a bona fide legal system. But in fact, everything's stacked in the government's favor and nothing in the favor of the person who's on trial.
Bob Dietz of the Committee to Protect Journalists. Follow us on Weibo. That's China Focus. I'm Sarah Williams.
That's the music for Asia Business on VOA Global. Here on The Voice of America with Jim Stevenson, I'm Ira Melman. Asian stocks did not have a very good day Thursday. They faltered as China's manufacturing weakened. Japan's Nikkei 225 inched up 1.1 percentage point to 17,306. South Korea's Kospi slipped 0.6% to 1955. China's Shanghai Composite dropped 0.1% to 24.49, and Australia's S&P ASX fell 1% to 53.17. Hong Kong's Hang Seng added 0.1% to 23.389, while markets in Southeast Asia all fell.
Also down, manufacturing activity in China. It's fell to a six-month low in November. That reflected sluggishness in the world's number two economy and weakness abroad, according to the preliminary version of HSBC's factory survey. That survey comes days after an official report showed that property prices softened in October in all but one of 70 cities tracked across China, falling 2.6% overall. Real estate had been a prime driver of China's blistering economic growth in previous years, but recent weakness in prices suggests economic growth will continue to slip.
Next year should be positive for the four big global stock indexes, but it could be a banner year for Asia stocks compared to Wall Street. That is the crystal ball review from Goldman Sachs, and its 2015 outlook for equities released Thursday. According to MarketWatch, in dollar terms, Asia Pacific, excluding Japan, is expected to return 11%, while Japan's TOPIX is set to return 8%. That's versus a 5% return for both the S&P 500 and the Europe Stoxx 600. There you have it, a look at Asia Business News on VOA.
This is Today in History. On November 21st, 1620, 41 of the approximately 100 English Puritans on board a ship off the coast of present-day Massachusetts signed what was called the Mayflower Compact. The document, named after the ship on which the Pilgrims sailed, committed the signers to establish a civil body politic. In 1694, François-Marie Arouet, later known by his pen name Voltaire, was born. A prolific writer, Voltaire is best known as one of the leading French Enlightenment philosophers. In 1877, American inventor Thomas Edison unveiled his phonograph, a way to record and play sound. In 1894, Port Arthur in Manchuria fell to the Japanese, a decisive victory in the First Sino-Japanese War. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Well, Ira, a previously unknown female Chihuahua named Frida has won her first political office. She's been named mayor of San Francisco for the day as part of a campaign to support that city's animal shelter.
Now, if you don't know what a Chihuahua is, I'm sorry, but it's a little tiny dog.
Hold it in the palm of your hand.
Yeah, or put it in your pocket. Frida, who is the Chihuahua whose owner bid $5,000 for the privilege, will spend her special day touring Bay Area landmarks and receiving a commendation from the Board of Supervisors, according to a spokeswoman for the city. Her honor will then be shown around City Hall and presented with a retirement package. No, not money. She gets a doggy bed, a gift basket, and play products.
I'm sure that's not the first time the mayor of San Francisco has been called a dog. Stay tuned. Latest world news is next.
And now, VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Iran's nuclear deadline looming, rights violations in eastern Ukraine, plus U.S. immigration reform controversy. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry flew to Vienna on Thursday there, joining in on the talks on Iran's nuclear program, coming just a few days before an important deadline. VOA's Al Pessin is in Vienna with our report.
Secretary Kerry and other Western officials say Iran must still make the strategic decision to accept limits on its nuclear program, a move that would contradict the so-called red lines set by Iran's supreme leader earlier this year. On Thursday, the Reuters news agency quoted an unnamed U.S. official as saying the negotiators are talking about another extension until March of next year. But earlier Thursday in Paris, Secretary Kerry said the opposite.
We're not talking about an extension, not among ourselves. We have not talked about the ingredients of an extension or an extension. We're talking about getting an agreement.
Still, Kerry said he would be willing to look at the possibility of an extension if the talks go to the final hour. Al Pessin, VOA News, Vienna.
Iraq is reporting gains against Islamic State jihadists in Anbar province, with Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi saying the government has retaken the initiative militarily. He spoke at a Baghdad news conference with Turkey's prime minister. Edward Uranian has more from the VOA Middle East Bureau.
Iraqi State TV reports that government security forces in Anbar have recaptured several villages near the provincial capital, Ramadi, and are trying to retake the town of Heat, which fell to Islamic State militants last month. The militants reportedly killed hundreds of members of the Al-Bunimr tribe in and around Heat last month after they were forced to surrender to the militants. The killings, which were documented in photographs and amateur videos, shocked other Sunni tribes in the region and turned many against the jihadist group. Edward Uranian, Cairo.
U.S. Vice President Joe Biden is in Ukraine there for talks with the country's leadership on the possibility of fresh assistance to the Kiev government as it battles pro-Russia insurgency out in the eastern part of the country near Russia. Details of the vice president's mission have not been disclosed, but on Wednesday, President Obama's nominee to fill the number two seat at the State Department said the White House should consider providing Ukraine with lethal defensive military equipment. Tony Blinken told the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that arming Ukraine's military could force Russia to rethink its role in supporting the rebellion. And a new United Nations report finds the presence of large numbers of sophisticated weapons as well as foreign fighters, including Russian soldiers, worsening the human rights situation in eastern Ukraine. The report issued by the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights says serious rights violations persist in eastern Ukraine despite a tenuous ceasefire between the government and the rebels. Lisa Schlein reporting from the UN in Geneva.
This seventh UN monthly report on Ukraine shows the situation in the rebel-controlled areas of eastern Ukraine has worsened. The report says more than 4,300 people were killed and more than 9,900 wounded in the conflict-affected areas from mid-April to November 18th. According to the UN, an average of 13 people have been killed every day since the government and rebels reached agreement on a ceasefire in early September. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Police arrested seven people at Nigeria's National Assembly on Thursday as security forces tried to block the Speaker, the House of Representatives, from going inside. A spokesman for the police told VOA that police fired tear gas during a clash between security forces and an estimated 200 supporters of House Speaker Aminu Tabuwal. Thursday's House session was to be the first since Tabuwal angered the ruling People's Democratic Party by switching to the opposition All Progressives Congress. Lawmakers were meeting to debate President Goodluck Jonathan's request to extend the state of emergency in three northeastern states where the army is battling the radical Islamist group Boko Haram. Here in Washington, some battles of their own, I guess, as President Obama is about to take what's called an executive action on immigration reform. Passions on the issue running high among lawmakers. And VOA's Michael Bowman is on Capitol Hill.
The mere whisper of an imminent executive order to address America's immigration challenges had senators scrambling to the chamber floor to stake out positions and draw battle lines. Republican Senator John Cornyn of Texas said President Obama is not entitled to act on his own.
Most Americans will correctly view this as an abuse of power. An abuse of power. His unilateral action, which is unconstitutional and illegal, will be deeply harmful to our nation's tradition of the rule of law.
The president insists he is only acting in the absence of Congress passing any legislation whatsoever to reform America's much-criticized immigration system. That point was echoed by Democratic Senator Richard Durbin, who noted that the only immigration reform bill to pass either chamber in more than a decade, a comprehensive Senate bill approved last year, has gone nowhere in the House.
The Republican-led House of Representatives has not only failed to have a hearing on this bill, has refused to bring this bill to the floor, has refused to bring any immigration bill to the floor. They refuse to address the obvious. We have a broken immigration system, and they refuse to act.
For now, all eyes in the debate are on the White House, where President Obama has the next move. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
And that move will come later today at 1 hour Universal Time. VOA will have live coverage and analysis of what Mr. Obama has to tell the nation when he takes to the TV, the radio, and the Internet with a message on immigration reform. Again, hope you'll join us 1 hour Universal Time on all media, including voanews.com, and you can listen under the red Listen tab. Well, we have some sad news to leave you with. U.S. film, theater, and television director Mike Nichols, one of the most decorated members of the U.S. entertainment industry, has died. He was 83, died of cardiac arrest on Wednesday. It was confirmed today. During a career spanning more than a half century, Nichols managed to win the four biggest awards in the U.S. entertainment industry, Oscar for movie direction, several Emmys for television, a Grammy for a 1961 comedy album, and 9 Tony Awards for Broadway shows. He also co-founded the Second City Comedy Troupe in Chicago, now known as a training ground for sketch comedians who go on to star in television shows as well as movies. Those are some of the stories making news. There's always a lot more right here at voanews.com. Hope you have a good Friday, everyone.
You're listening to Global Business News on VOA Global. Jim Stevenson along with Ira Melman. U.S. stocks shook off early gloom and moved decidedly higher Thursday, led by gains in retail and energy sector stocks. Ahead of the opening bell, stock futures were under pressure after a batch of economic indicators from Europe and China showed weakness, but the market shook them off following some upbeat data as well as better-than-expected earnings from retailers. The S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average moved above their previous closing records, the NASDAQ also up.
Executives from a Japanese airbag manufacturer faced some tough questions from a U.S. Senate panel Thursday over the risk of millions of defective airbags in U.S. cars. VOA's David Byrd reports this hearing came after 5 people died. Several others were injured in airbag explosions.
The Takata airbags are in millions of vehicles, and the U.S. National Highway Traffic Safety Administration wants the company to recall and replace them. The airbags can explode with too much force and send metal fragments flying into the car's passenger compartments. At Thursday's hearing, Stephanie Erdman, who was injured by one of the airbags, told the panel about her injury from one of the defective devices.
Since that day, I've endured multiple surgeries and therapies. I have more to go still. My vision will never be the same. I will never be the same.
Hiroshi Shimizu is Takata's vice president of global quality assurance. He expressed condolences for any problems.
We are deeply sorry about each of the reported instances in which a Takata airbag has not performed as designed.
David Byrd reporting about the hearings about airbags. And that's a look at international business news from the Voice of America. This is VOA Global from the Voice of America. Coming up on our program today, you will hear a story in the American Cafe about happiness. Now, if you know, there's one nation in Asia, Bhutan, that has made it part of their law of happiness. Mm-hmm. And some people around here want to kind of recreate it. We'll see what happens coming up now. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. In the Kingdom of Bhutan, the measure of the quality of life is expressed as the GNH, the Gross National Happiness. In 2012, the tiny Himalayan nation persuaded the United Nations General Assembly to establish the International Day of Happiness. It's a formal opportunity to consider what makes us happy. As we hear from Faith Lapidus in this report by Faiza Al-Masri, the emotion is so important to our well-being that America's founding fathers considered the pursuit of it a God-given right.
What is happiness? We know it when we feel it, but there's no simple way to define it, says Joseph Panetta, spokesman for Live Happy magazine. However, he adds, there are certain components to happiness.
Those things include positive relationships, a positive outlook. They include engagement, being engaged in your community and the things that go on around you. And meaning. Meaning is probably one of the most important things. When someone feels that what they're doing has a real meaning behind it that is greater than themselves, they derive a much more positive feeling from doing it.
Being happy, he says, is essential for our health.
We know from a scientific perspective that human beings are actually hardwired to perform their best when happy. People with positive and optimistic mindsets earn higher incomes, they set and achieve more aggressive goals, they have less stress, they're more energetic, and they also recover from illness faster, and interestingly, they live longer.
Filmmaker Adam Schell agrees. He considers himself a happy person.
I've always, you know, had a high baseline for happiness, and my default goes back to happy and content. You know, I like to laugh a lot. And for me, that's one of my priorities in life.
Schell has traveled across America searching for genuinely happy people for his documentary, Pursuing Happiness.
What we did is we just reached out to everybody we knew along that route and said, hey, who's the happiest person you know? And we got amazing responses.
They found more than 360 happy people.
We've interviewed people in their late 90s. We actually have a woman who's 104. We've also interviewed people who are two, barely able to talk, but they have a perspective on happiness and everything in between.
Schell says those people didn't let life's challenges take away their happiness.
There's this one gentleman who actually lives in Cincinnati, Ohio. He lost both of his hands from his elbow down in an electrical accident almost 25 years ago. Then he lost his wife to cancer and had to raise his daughter on his own. And this is a guy who, it seems like, everything that could go wrong in his life was going wrong. And the entire time he was going through all of this, he maintained such high standards of, you know, attitude and emotion, and he was always happy. He was always cracking jokes and seeing the lighter side of life.
People, he says, are not happy because they're successful. They succeed because they're happy.
You know, life is difficult in any way you slice it, no matter where you live, how you live. And I think it's all about attitude. It's how you look at the world. And when something bad happens, yeah, you have to go through that. Negative emotions and the fear and the loss and the pain. And none of the people that we've interviewed have denied those emotions. But it's how you turn that around. It's saying, okay, I went through that. That happened. Now I want to get back to me. Now I want to get back to the way I want to be in life.
To encourage people to focus on what makes them happy. That's the goal behind the Acts of Happiness campaign by Live Happy Magazine, says Joseph Panetta.
The Acts of Happiness campaign will actually bring walls of happiness to major metropolitan cities all across the country. And these walls of happiness are meant for people to go there and write on them their acts of happiness, what they do to share and spread happiness in the world.
For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. You can hear us 7 days a week at voanews.com and on many podcasting platforms.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Maybe you're like me. You like to take a cruise every now and then to get away from cold weather or explore the world. Well, Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines is offering the world's first smart ship, where advanced technology allows guests to cater their vacation exactly as they want it. The ship, the Quantum of the Seas, was built in Germany and started its maiden voyage across the Atlantic November 2nd. The Quantum holds nearly 4,100 guests and a crew of 1,500. It offers what Royal Caribbean CEO Richard Fain told the Associated Press is a sophisticated and customized experience.
Quantum of the Seas is the most sophisticated vessel we've ever built. It has more activities. It has more technology in the smart ship concept. It has more fun and innovations than we've ever seen before.
The high-tech experience starts the moment you get on board, with passengers using radio frequency identification to speed up boarding and even digitally track their luggage. Each crew member has a tablet to help cater to the guests, and the fast wireless network on board allows passengers to use smart wristbands to make purchases, navigate the ship, and even access their rooms. Adam Goldstein is the chief operating officer of Royal Caribbean. He told Reuters that customers will be able to make their vacation exactly what they want it to be.
We've really put our customer in charge of their cruise. They have the apps and they have the technologies and the offerings so that they can have the cruise experience that they want to have. They can arrange it for themselves. They can manage it for themselves from the beginning of the cruise to the end. They're in charge of their cruise vacation in a way that they haven't been before.
The Quantum of the Seas boasts ultra-fast internet service through a wireless broadband network. Royal Caribbean partnered with O3b to provide satellite internet service, something that Adam Goldstein says will allow passengers to stay connected wherever they are.
We're very, very fortunate as a company to have partnered with O3b, who created a new kind of satellite technology that can beam fiber-like speed from the sky to a ship, to into a jungle, into an island. That never existed before. Quantum of the Seas is taking full advantage of the capability. She has more bandwidth available to her than all the other cruise ships of the world put together.
Say you want a cocktail on your cruise. Well, the Quantum of the Seas features a so-called bionic bar known as the Maker Shaker. That's where you can program robots to mix your drink exactly the way you want it. Alessandro Incisa is the engineer in charge of the Maker Shaker.
Almost infinite combination. You have more than 31 spirits. You have 8 sodas, juices, mixes. You have sugar, mint, lime. I can't even remember how many, but yeah. So if you mix them, the beauty of this is that you can mix them exactly as you like. So you might want to have the mint before sugar or before rum and or after, and you can just do whatever the exact combination with the appropriate action.
The ship also features a pod known as the North Star, which rises 30 stories above the sea before rotating to give passengers a 360-degree view of the ocean or of a port city. Richard Fain says the North Star is something passengers have never experienced before.
North Star is an amazing addition. It's something you wouldn't have thought to have on a cruise. But it takes you 30 stories over the water. It gives you the opportunity to see out a vista that nobody gets. You can be in the middle of nowhere. You can look out on the ship, on the ocean. And that kind of thing is what we want to provide.
Royal Caribbean also promises first-class entertainment aboard. Nick Weir is the vice president of entertainment for the cruise line.
Normally, cruise lines compete with cruise lines. Well, I just joined the company about a year ago, but I've spent the last 10 years in Las Vegas. A lot of producers are my friends. They all think they're the best in the world. Not anymore. I'm going after them. I want this theatrical space and the content we do in here for our guests to be the best on the planet.
All the technology is intended to attract more young people to cruising. The Quantum of the Seas will be moored in New Jersey for the first year and then will move to its home port of Shanghai, China. So what do you think? Would you take a trip on a smart ship? Does the idea of customizing your vacation appeal to you? Well, let us know by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia, and you can email your questions or comments to voaasia@voanews.com. Until next time, I'm David Berg.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman along with Jim Stevenson. Stay with us on VOA Global. Coming up in just a few minutes, you will hear the top tunes of the week. Ray McDonald does that for us every week. You hear it every Friday around most of the world here on VOA Global, and that's coming up in just a little bit.
And baseball fans don't get to follow Major League Baseball in the United States. The season's over, but we've got baseball news and sports next.
From the Voice of America with Jim Stevenson, I'm Ira Melman. We check sports. In the final game of the series, the Major League Baseball All-Stars beat Japan 3-1. Matt Shoemaker allowed two hits and five scoreless innings. Ryosuke Kikuchi then tripled off the pitcher for the Matt Choate in the seventh and scored with no Nakata's ground out. The pitcher then threw a single hit in the ninth, ending the game. The experience in Japan has been described as very positive by John Farrell, the All-Stars manager.
Major League Baseball has a new commissioner. Baseball owners unanimously approved Rob Manfred for a five-year term. Manfred will be replacing longtime commissioner Bud Selig. Selig described the transition as smooth and orderly. The new commissioner will need to address some questions on instant replay and the pace of baseball games. Manfred is also mandated to attract young fans back to baseball.
We'll see how he does that. In golf, Rory McIlroy has taken the first-round lead in Dubai, shooting four birdies in his first five holes. McIlroy shot a 6-under 66 on the first day.
I was really excited to get back out on the golf course and play competitively. It's the last 6 weeks has felt like, you know, a long time away from the you know, competitive play, and I just wanted to get back out there and feel what it was like again. And yeah, it was great. I started off really well. I've been saying all week I've been hitting the ball really well in practice, and it was just about trying to continue that out onto the golf course, and you know, luckily today I was able to do that.
The DP World Tour Championship will mark the end of this year's golf season.
Adam Scott trails four others in the first round of the Australian Masters. Scott won the Masters in the past 2 years, but he struggled with strong winds in a 1-over-73 Thursday. A group of four other Australians are tied for first, consistently shooting 67s to share the lead.
Roger Federer will face Gael Monfils in the Tennis Davis Cup final Friday. Federer's participation in the Cup was in doubt due to a back injury in London. Despite an impressive collection of titles, Federer has never won the Davis Cup. Federer's presence is a boost for the Swiss team. Switzerland has also never won a Davis Cup. France has won 9 times.
Always good to see Roger Federer on the court. That's sports on VOA Global.
Hi, I'm Ray McDonald on the Voice of America, and this is the Top 5 Countdown. We're trotting out the five most popular songs in the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles chart for the week ending November 22nd, 2014. If you liked last week's lineup, you're going to like this week's, because nothing changes. Well, that's not entirely true. Songs do switch positions. Let's start in fifth place, where Jessie J, Ariana Grande, and Nicki Minaj hold with Bang Bang. Two of them may soon cover a modern pop classic. Hold on for details.
Bang, bang, into the room. I know you want it. Bang, bang, all over you. I'll let you
Jessie J, Ariana Grande, and Nicki Minaj spend another week in fifth place with Bang Bang. Noted producer Rodney Darkchild Jerkins is working on an album to celebrate his 20th anniversary in the music business. Speaking with Hits Daily Double, Rodney says he wants to remake the 1998 Brandy and Monica smash, The Boy Is Mine, using Jessie and Ariana. Rodney co-wrote and co-produced The Boy Is Mine, which spent 13 weeks at number one. Well, we have a change in fourth place. Tove Lo backs off a slot with Habits, Stay High. Tove is set to go on tour with an even bigger star. I'll have details after the song.
You're gone and I gotta stay high all the time to keep you off my mind. Ooh, 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 high all the time to keep you off my mind. Ooh, 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 spend my days locked in a haze trying to forget you, babe. I fall back down. Gotta stay high all my life. Don't forget I'm missing you. Ooh.
Tove Lo retreats a notch to number four with Habits, Stay High. Beginning November 30th, Tove tours Australia and New Zealand as the opening act for Katy Perry. They'll be together through December 20th. January finds Tove Lo headlining in Europe. Up a slot to number three goes Maroon 5 with Animals. How many number one hits have these guys enjoyed? Well, the answer's right around the corner.
Baby, I'm playing on you.
Maroon 5 kicks it up a notch to third place with Animals. This is their seventh top five hit single, and they've gone all the way to number one three times with Makes Me Wonder, Moves Like Jagger, and One More Night. Holding in second place is Meghan Trainor with her former eight-week champ All About That Bass. Meghan got into a spot of trouble over some comments she made. Hold on for more.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass.
Meghan Trainor holds in second place with All About That Bass. Speaking with Entertainment Tonight, Meghan said she was a chubby girl and briefly tried to stop eating after a boy suggested she lose weight. Meghan said she didn't have the strength to develop an eating disorder. Well, that caught the attention of Demi Lovato, who tweeted that eating disorders were no laughing matter and that strength was the wrong word to use. Holding in first place is Taylor Swift with Shake It Off. Taylor's taken her battle against streaming services to another level. Hold on for details. Taylor Swift spends a fourth total week atop the Hot 100 singles chart with Shake It Off. Recently, Taylor pulled her music from the streaming service Spotify, accusing it of underpaying musicians. Now, she's also removed her catalog from streaming services in China. That's going to do it for now, but who knows what next week will bring. Join me in 7 days, and we'll find out together. I'm Ray McDonald, and this has been the Top 5 Countdown on The Voice of America.
This is VOA Global from The Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman.
I'm Jim Stevenson.
How bad is the news business?
I don't know, Ira.
Well, let me tell you. One of California's largest newspapers is asking its reporters and other people who work there to help deliver the papers on Sundays.
What?
Yeah, Reuters got a hold of a memo from the Orange County Register.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good newspaper. It recently stopped contracting with rival Los Angeles Times for delivery services, so it's offering $150 gift cards to staff members if they deliver 500 to 600 papers, according to the memo, which was confirmed by the paper's top editor. Employees have also there been asked to help out in customer service, personally telephoning subscribers who had not been able to reach a live agent, according to a memo sent to the staff.
So let me get the story straight, Ira. You get to write the news, then you get to deliver it personally.
Yeah, it is delivered in many different ways.
But, I hope they have a bicycle. You remember, you delivered newspapers as a
kid. I did, and I don't know about where you live, but when I was a kid, you had to fold it a certain way, so when you threw it on the driveway, on the doorstep, or whatever, it would stay together.
Right. Yours didn't, though,
it
I bet.
It didn't stay together at all.
You had to have those little plastic bags, too, when it rained.
Yeah, yeah, that we did. And I don't think I delivered newspapers for all that long.
Well, good luck to them.
Well, that's going to wrap up our program for this day. This is VOA Global. For Jim Stevenson, I'm Ira Melman, and we thank the people who contributed to this program. Director Tracy Carter, Jackson Witt has been our technical director, and our executive editor is Diane Gal. Have yourself a wonderful day.
You too.